love the smell of movies in the morning.
It's B Movies, thanks to Mietze Bar, your source for all things NZIFF, thanks to the best place to go before or after.
Hey, it is time for the movies. New Zealand International Film Festival is up and running, and as part of the film festival, there's a great documentary on that called Dog's Best Friend, and here's the director, Aaron Wilson. Hi, Aaron. How are you?
G'day, mate. How are you doing?
Thanks for coming in.
Oh, my pleasure.
Your documentary's awesome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Tell us a wee bit about you first, and then we'll get on to about this particular project.
Yeah, sure. I've got an acting background. I went to Toi Whakaari down in Wellington, trained as an actor, and for most actors at some stage in their life, you know, get to an age and stage where you want to kind of diversify and kind of create something and not be told no, you're
work.
Not good enough.
Yeah,
well, there is that, and you just get sick of kind of someone else, you know, sort of telling you whether you're right or not. And I thought, I want to make something that's mine, and I'm ready to direct. And my mum put me on to this guy. Mum said, "Oh, look, you know, check out this guy on YouTube.
That's he does
amazing."
How it happens.
Exactly, so this
is your first documentary?
It is. I hadn't directed anything before then,
awesome.
Mum put me onto him. I checked him out on YouTube, cold emailed him, said, "Let's make a documentary." And he said, "Yep, come over, stay as long as you like, let's do it."
So the documentary is called Dog's Best Friend.
Yeah.
And I don't even know whereabouts in Australia it is.
Rouse Hill, which is northwest Sydney. From memory, it's kind of about sort of 50 minutes to an hour from the airport.
Okay.
The first time we went there, we actually travelled out in late afternoon, and Jacob, our protagonist, we got out to his house, and there's like these 30 dogs. Well, I could hear growling and barking, but it was dark. There were no lights on in his house, and then for a split second, I was like, "Oh my god, what have I done?" Like
Wolf Creek.
Oh, I was like, "We're going to be murdered. We'll be in the news tomorrow in New Zealand." It was a couple of emails, and here we are.
Yeah.
I was like, "Shit, we've made a big mistake." But his power had gone out in his house. It blew a fuse, so
right.
I freaked out for a second, but it was all okay.
So what? How did your mum get onto it?
We just grew up with dogs in the house all the time. Mum had a couple. She rescued a couple of dogs, and she loves, you know how some parents get into the kind of
online communities.
The social media, you know, they love it. It's a great way of keeping in touch with the kids. And,
Or just really digging into an interest that they have, you know?
So she was checked out this guy, Jacob Lezak, and she was watching his YouTube videos, and, you know, he just had these big long videos because the stuff that he does with dogs in terms of rehab, it takes ages. So there'll be like a 20-minute video of him just sort of standing, looking at a dog, talking about what's going on.
Yeah.
So they're not kind of made in a kind of a commercial kind of way. And she just got hooked on them, and I started watching them too. And I was like, what an intriguing guy. And
you're a dog person?
Oh, mate, oh yeah,
dog ass.
But I the one thing I learned about making the documentary is I can't actually have a dog. That's the thing I did learn, not because of who I am, but just because I don't have the lifestyle to do it justice, you know.
So the location is pretty much only.
At his dog psychology centre, canine
dog psychology centre. Yeah, that's what he calls it. Yeah,
he calls it CBE. So canine behaviour expert dog psychology centre. So we just call it CBE for short.
Which just looks like a big property.
It is.
It's where there's 30 dogs are roaming and some in cages and stuff like that. But he's really good at what he does, isn't he? Mm. I mean, there must have been quite. Before you even had we were rolling when you got there, I suppose. But I mean, even right from arriving, it must have been amazing to witness
someone in
control of that many dogs for a start. Let alone all the other amazing things that he does.
Absolutely, he's one of those kind of sort of Zen dudes who's just has this way with animals, and they just know. And he's very in control, very calm. I mean, these dogs that he's dealing with, like we had a border collie who passed away while we were doing post-production on the film, but he was kind of my mascot and my mate, and I was trying out little things on him with training and bits and pieces. And so he would have been, I don't know, maybe 20 kgs tops. Jacob's dogs are like 40 kgs, 50 kgs.
These
are like
big units, eh?
Oh, man. And if they get out of control, you know, the powerful breeds, pit bulls, and he had a Cane Corso and a few others, if things go bad, they go really bad. Thor. Like big,
Thor,
heavy dogs.
Such a good
that,
name.
Yes, yes.
Scary though. I want a scary dog.
Oh yeah.
You started the I think first line of the doc is, "I'm not a dog whisperer. Don't call me dog whisperer."
That's what I was thinking about as well. It's funny he says that because it's like, well,
totally. It sets it up perfectly though.
Yeah.
It's like
that's him going. He was basically kind of going, don't. I'm not into any of that. I'm not into any of the flashy, you know, this isn't a TV show. Don't compare me to Cesar Millan is basically what he's saying. You know, not to say wasn't into what Cesar did, but he's like, I'm myself, I am me, and I am doing what I do, and I've been doing this for years, and I'm third generation, and, you know, don't muddy it with some other dude who's kind of in a popular kind of...
So I was talking to Aaron, the director of this particular documentary, Dog's Best Friend, off here before, and I'm wary of... To tell too many stories of what happens in the movie, because there's some really cool little bits where you find out about them, about him and the people that work there at the centre, and just his techniques and how it's all come about and how he's and where he's, you know, where he's at with the whole thing. It's good. And must have been, how long were you, how much shooting did you do? You were there for a while? Or?
Yeah, we were. What did we do? We went...
Basically what I was saying, I don't want to give away too many good bits.
Yeah. I mean, it's great that you notice those little bits, because when you're in the edit, you're going, oh, are we being obvious enough about that? I need to say more, you know. And sometimes I fell into the trap of being a bit too sensational. It was like I wanted him to tell me more about his past, and I wanted to go deeper. And I thought, because that'll... And then I realised what I was accidentally doing is making a 60 minutes news story. Do you know what I mean? I was being sensational. And what I needed to find, it was just my inexperience, I guess, what I needed to find was what made the film cinematic, and what could I hint at and touch on and let the audience do the work. Otherwise, you're just bashing them over the head and it's just another story. But we shot, we went over there, we started in 2014, that's how long ago we started the project. But
And it was Kickstarter funded as well?
It was, yeah. We got 324 people, gave us $34,000 in total. And they've got their little name.
I saw Jennifer Ward Leland's name on there.
Just
scrolling through at the end there.
And probably
some other BFM listeners, I too would imagine.
Oh, look, all the big... There were lots of big names.
And little names too.
Well, and little names.
There's one in that list of contributors. There was one, The Bro.
Yes. That's what they chose to call themselves. We shot, it was about 18 months worth of shooting. We went over about six times and spent roughly 5 to 10 days at a time in Rouse Hill, yeah.
And so as a first documentary for you, that's was it expensive? Was it scary? That sort of, that's a big call. Your first documentary is in the festival, man.
Yeah, true.
You're on the radio talking about it, man.
It is awesome that it's sort of got this far, and it's kind of like that. It sounds like a cliche, but it's a lovely full sort of circle for the film, where we start from just an idea that Mum mentioned to being in a festival.
I love the way
it's
your mum mentioned it to you. You think she's going to mention many other things to you now?
Well, look, I'm going to listen to her a lot more than I have in the past.
Now, have you seen this? Have you got this? Cut this out of the paper for you. Is it it's a beautiful examination too of we see so often in documentaries how humans are just fuckwits.
Yeah. You're right.
And this is he's not at all. He's a great. He's a colourful character. Let's not worry about that. It's an interesting job he's doing, but it's also just, you know, we learn from watching something like that.
Yeah.
Just maybe how we need to, you know, just be a little bit more thoughtful to each other, perhaps.
Oh, mate. Yeah, that's the thing. What I realised is that part of the deal of us making the film was that they insisted, him and Jenna, his wife, insisted that we stay on the property. And I was like, oh, man, I was so looking forward to, like, going back to the motel at the end of the day, go to the bar, get a drink and a hot meal, and, you know, and recharge
like
our camera.
Like a film wanker.
Yeah, recharge the camera batteries, plug in the camera, look at the footage of the day. But he was like, no. And he was cracking out the monkey shoulder at about 4 p.m. And we started to get pissed at about 4 and sitting around the campfire. Of course, you could have recorded... You know, I could make 5 documentaries with all the kind of around the campfire stories and everything else. But
I thought that as well. Actually, I thought there's a lot of peripheral stuff that I'm sure you could have dug into as well. But
absolutely, man. It was colourful is putting it mildly. And James, my cameraman and I, we just kind of lived on the property. We literally slept on the couch. We slept on with the mice. Slept on the floor on a mattress on the floor with the mice. Slept in a caravan with a dog and the mice. Jacob's anti kind of baiting of rodents because of the dogs, and one he did actually lose 2 dogs because the property got flooded from water, and because it was a rental property, like a giant rental property, he didn't have any concrete bases for the kennels, so the water, the rodenticide or the kind of, you know, the bait stuff dissolves in the water and floods the dogs' kennels, and 2 of the dogs lapped up the water and and they had to give a little page. There was a dog, you know. What I realised, if a dog gets poisoned by something like that, it's actually a really hard road to kind of bring them back from it. But yeah, two of the dogs who were actually in the film ended up passing away, which we didn't cover as part of the film. But and he was devastated.
Yeah, you imagine, know. Totally.
Were you intimidated by the dogs when you were there, when you first got there?
I mean, I grew up with dogs myself, but I can't explain it. Like, he's got a sort of free roaming pack of dogs, probably about 15 of them.
And most of them, I think we should probably, don't know if we mentioned, are all like hard out rescue dogs.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
all
dogs that their owners have come in. And there's one bit, which where their owners have come to drop them in because they desperately need them to rehab these dogs into something not a psychopathic dog or something, and they've just left them there.
Yeah, never came back.
They're going, oh, that dog is just too full on. Here, could you train him and then just taken off? And so he's really got the roughest of the rough there, and the most abused dogs and stuff like that. And
another point he tries to get across is that it's not necessarily the breed of the dog; it's the way it's been treated.
Yeah,
or the,
yeah. Did you think that before you went over?
I had an idea that the kind of, you know, breeds can be kind of misunderstood, and it's kind of more about the owner, but also having a skill set where you can actually, you know, some of these big, more powerful dogs, they've got so much energy. They're like the V8s of the dog world, and you've got to be able to kind of, when I say handle them, they need so much exercise. They need to get that energy out, otherwise it gets pent up and it has to kind of come out somehow. Mm. And people, you've got to look at the reasons why people get these, more powerful breeds of dog, you know, whether it's for protection or they want to look cool, or they, you know, they're not just motivated by, I love the breed, but so many times people just, Jacob's all about, you know, people should be training to, you know, have a graduated licensing system for even having these dogs so that you have a skill set, you know what you're dealing with. Otherwise, it can get really, when it goes bad, it goes really bad, you know?
Yeah. It's an amazing documentary. People should definitely go see it. And if you like, I'm not a dog person at all, but I said to Tess this morning, I said, I felt a little bit, quite a lot more dog person this morning.
Oh, that's nice.
You really understand the whole, there's a beautiful animal there. And
totally.
And if you're a dog person, you're going to love it. And if you're not, then I think you'll love it as well. And what did you sort of come away with it?
What did I come away with?
Apart from a whole lot of stuff to edit and the panic of your first documentary, that sort of stuff. With your thoughts about the animals, about dogs, and the way that Jacob sort of changed those for you.
Yeah, I think it just made me aware that I can't just go, oh, I'd love to have that kind of dog. The type of dog you get is almost dictated by the lifestyle and the time you have to put back into it. And I've got one of our mates who's a vet who was kind of this vet friend who wasn't in the film, but he's talking about people get a puppy for Christmas and literally 2-3 months later they come back and pay $250 to the vet to put it down because this cool idea is sort of sick of it. And he said it happens all the time. It's not just a one-off thing. He's like, people are constantly getting these dogs put to sleep. So I guess the thing I'd come away with is I can't have a dog right now because my lifestyle. My lifestyle does not allow me, even though I might think, oh, have a little dog, take it everywhere with me like a nifty auntie person.
Like a slipper with eyes.
It's like, no, I can't because I can't. I don't have the time and energy to put back into it, and it's not fair on the dog. And, you know, it's a nice idea for me and company or whatever, but, don't get one if you can't put the
time
and
energy. That's actually what I took away from watching the film as well.
Mm.
Responsibility.
Hey, we should probably.
We have a double pass.
We have a double pass to give away to the showing of Dogs Best Friend. Will you be doing a Q&A or any of that sort of stuff there?
It's
on July 25th at the Academy, by the way, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. And then we've got one more on the.
Well, you check the watch line. Is that today?
I just know all the dates. 21, 23, 25, and 29 of this month. 25th is at the Academy and 29th is out at Westgate.
Great.
And the 21st and 23rd are also at the Academy.
Yes.
Oh,
There's a Q&A after tomorrow night. I'll be there for Q&A.
Yep. Cool, cool, cool. Yep. Well, that's what we'll double pass to that. If you'd like to go along to that, you've got Simplicity B card, give us a call now, 309-3879. First in, first served. I won't make you buck Rick's dog or anything. Hey, Aaron, congratulations on
Thank you. Doggo Dog's
best friend. It's really, really cool, and I look forward to seeing more stuff you do.
I recommend it.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming in.
Cheers.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, good, good. Yeah, normally you're here to talk about telly, but now you're going to talk about the bigger telly that goes on for longer and is only one thing.
I have moved up in the world. I'm doing film now.
You're right. Guts deep in the film festival. And
Film festival.
I mean, these are special films.
There's some real stuff, right?
That you may not normally see in your usual multiplexitarian rhythms.
Well, I was wanting to see this for a long, long time, this film, and I knew I probably wouldn't be able to find it in New Zealand, like for a big screen release. So I'm really glad I've watched it now. Like, I'm really happy.
What film are you talking about, Sam?
It's called The Miseducation of Cameron Post, starring Chloe Grace Moretz, and directed and written by Desiree Akhavan. I think it's how you say it. Mm-hmm. But she wrote the screenplay and directed it. And I write notes for every like thing I review, and just the first two words of this note says amazing film, full stop. So that's what I think of it.
Thanks for coming in, Sam.
And I'm done.
If that's the top two words, then you must have loved it.
It's a winner.
What's it about?
It's about gay conversion therapy in the 90s. So Chloe Grace Moretz's character, Cameron Post, she gets caught by her boyfriend making out with a girl in the backseat of a car. Dun, dun, dun. And she's from a very Christian family, and the whole town's pretty Christian. And she ends up going to a gay conversion therapy camp, which is very topical right now in New Zealand.
Very topical.
And I suspect probably not too different from a gay conversion camp in the 90s either.
No. Well, yeah, it's just... It's as a queer man, watching this was quite, like, uncomfortable the whole time, but that's really good.
I think sort of the point, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And I really, really just enjoyed the glimpse it gave into, like, this community. Mainly for the main reason that the nuances it gave the Christian characters was actually really good, because I can find it really easy to hate a Christian character in a film for being anti-gay or wanting to convert gay people. And they made every Christian character that was trying to convert themselves or other people really, like, lovable, or, like, you understood their motivations and that they were trying to do good even if it's not a good thing that they were doing. Mm. You know?
Which is quite a brave thing for the filmmaker to do, I think.
Yeah,
on that topic, because it'd be really easy just to, you know,
demonize them and be like, this is a bad thing that they're doing. But, like, that's good film, is when you can have a bad character that you also still think really highly of.
Yeah. Or at least go, oh, they're just confused.
Exactly. Yeah. And there was just so much about this film that I loved. The cinematography really, really got to me. That does this amazing thing where it just, like, sits on its characters. Like, the camera just doesn't move and it just sits there, and you sit in this awkward silence, and, like, for sometimes, like, minutes at a time.
I love that! I've talked about that before. I love that. Long, yep. Drawn out. Wow, look, this has cost a lot of money just to have this silence, isn't it?
Yeah.
And from a filmmaking perspective, ooh.
And, like, every sex scene as well, every lesbian sex scene did the exact same thing. It didn't, like, have these, like, sweet, tender kisses or, like, soft lighting or, like, hand on butt or, like, you know, that kind of stuff. And it was...
Saxophone.
Yeah, it was just, like, the camera sitting there of these two shadowy figures having teenage sex, which is, like, always awkward and always confusing and never that romantic and making love. It was just sex. And, like, it wasn't shot from the male gaze, which it so could have been.
Yeah.
But because it's obviously directed by a woman, it wasn't going to be shot from the male gaze. But that's something that was really cool about this, because most lesbian films I watch, it's very, like, oh, it's so romantic and this and this, and there's always, like, it always seems French in a way, you know? This was just raw and real. And I was just like, yes, this is cool. This is sick. Like, this is... like two 17-year-olds going at it, like discovering themselves and their bodies and the things they hate about themselves, because they all hate themselves as well, which is, you know, so real for a teenager. Mm.
So I guess that's what the gay conversion sort of mentality preys on.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like
the things that you fear about yourself are true. Oh, look, you know, we can get rid of those for you, that sort of thing.
Well, there's this recurring line they say in the film, which is, God did not make me wrong. I acted wrongly in front of God. So I have to fix myself for God, and it's like, it just baffles me, because that whole mindset doesn't make any sense to me, because it's like, how can he make it wrong, but then you've got to fix it, like, you know? Just, I don't get it personally. Yeah. But then this film, and this film just gets real dark, like the third act. So the only criticism I have is the third act is so strong that the first two acts seem kind of boring, but that's only after you've watched the third act, you know, like. Yeah. I'm gripped the whole time, but the third act is just so stunning. There's these two scenes that are set to music that are just these, like, they just stick in my mind so much. There's one scene where they're singing oh my god, What's Up by the Four Non Blondes. Like, what's going on? Like, hey, 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 hey.
Oh, challenging song to have to listen to, but yep.
I love that song, so
Yeah.
But
do you mind if I just bust out a round of, ah, yeah.
I love it. What's wrong with that? But it's the first time you see any of these teenage characters.
It's having 90s,
fun.
Though. 90s.
So
yeah.
90s.
Yeah.
And they're having fun and they're smiling and they're just like actually having a moment of brevity for once in this like terrible, terrible situation yeah. they're in. And then there's this other scene where this character Mark, who is the standout character of the film, a minor character, you wouldn't think anything of him until the last third act. He's quoting scripture to this amazing like classical music and he's just quoting this Bible verse over and over, and it's just like so powerful and so gripping. And it's about like weakness and strength and masculinity, and I'm like, oh, just so, so good. Like you've got to see it to understand what I'm trying to say, but it's just so cool. And I was so happy about it.
And when you walked out, I've got this big theory with I've always wanted to do, is to, a way of reviewing movies, is just to put a camera on the faces of everyone as they're walking out of the cinema.
Oh yeah.
And just, and so what did you feel like when you, what was like, were you chatty when you walked out? Were you sort of were you a bit blown away when you walked out? Were you sort of
I called
did,
three.
Did, were you discussing? You know, did you call?
Three of my gay friends, and I was like, you need to see this film. It's actually just so good. It's not just good because it's a gay film, like, because that's really easy to say, but it's a teenage film. Like, it's about the thing that's so good about the characters is they're not heroes, they're just teenagers like existing. And like, there's this dumb thing that gay movies will do where there's the gay main character's a hero, like they're like outspoken and like divisive and like they're standing up against the, you know, society and stuff. These are 14, 15, 16, 17 year olds. Like, they're not able to do that.
There's enough scary shit to have to deal with anyway, regardless of take your sexuality into it.
Like, teenagers already hate themselves. Like, they're just doubling up that ante. So, like, I just called my friends and I was like, hey, go see this film. Like, just go have a look. Just give it a chance. Because I don't really like Chloe Grace Moretz. I think she's kind of... I don't like the way... This is going to sound dumb. I don't like her face. Like, her face is... I want to, like, scrunch it up.
Okay,
like a
sure,
little,
sure.
Yeah. But she carried the film so, so well. And the film has such amazing minor characters that you just kind of, like... You don't even think this is Chloe Grace Moretz, you know? It is Cameron Post, and that's really cool.
Did you feel like... Because being gay... Being 14 and gay in the 90s would be very different to being 14 and gay now.
Exactly.
And could you feel that sort of... The movie as well, or is it?
The movie's kind of anachronistic in that you can't really, if you didn't know it was set in the 90s, you might not think it was set in the 90s. Like, it looks It looks like it's set in the 90s and stuff.
And as we said before, it's very relevant right now.
Yeah.
Right now, today. You know,
like, it feels timeless because the idea of a gay Christian camp, because they're all wearing uniforms and they're all, you know, they're all wearing uniforms, they're already like out of place, and they're watching films and TV shows, and this one Jazzercise video that's like, that's called,
because it's Jazzercise back in those days.
It's called Praise-a-size because they're praising God. Well,
I've seen shows like that.
So they're watching this 80s Jazzercise video in the 90s. So it could be like, it's just, there's this amazing thing where it's timeless and they're wearing uniforms, you can't really tell what's going on. And it could be now. It could be in 5 years. Like, there's the idea of gay conversion therapy is that it's so outdated already and so ancient a practice that it could be set in any time.
And it's so freaky that people really think that they've got to. I'm going to make it my job to stop people, to try my hardest to stop people being gay.
Well,
it's like, why?
But that's what's so good about the film. They're helping them.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, just stop. Don't help me. Let me be who I am.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Interesting. Hey, the movie is on. Do we have
It is on the Thursday, 26th of July at the Civic, Saturday, 28th of July in Hollywood, and Thursday, 2nd of August in the Civic as well.
Awesome. And the Civic too. Lush. Okay.
Yeah.
And comes highly recommended. Sam's fizzing about this one. And when was it made?
I think it might have been 2017 it was made, but released this year.
When did you hear about it? It came out
saw the first trailer, like, it would have been like 6 months ago. Because, like, you know, all the gay blogs are always the first to be like, this is the thing you've got to watch.
Yep.
Cool. Yeah, and I loved it. It also reminds me very much of But I'm a Cheerleader. Do you know that film? Like, But I'm a Cheerleader. It's about a lesbian cheerleader. This is set in like the very early 90s, like very early 90s film. And she goes to Christian conversion therapy camp. Exact same premise as this film, but they dissect and move so differently. And it's just such a cool... If you could watch But I'm a Cheerleader and then this, I think it'd be like a really cool just lesbian matinee. Like, Like, I might put on that event. Like, it's pretty sick.
Like an omnibus.
Yeah.
And the Miseducation of Cameron Post is on at the New Zealand International Film Festival right now. Thank you, Sam.
No worries.
We also have a little something for this segment to give away, which is a $30 Mezze Bar.
Oh, good, because the Mezze Bar do support our film festival segment, and we'd like to give it away to a Simplicity B card holder, wouldn't we?
Yeah, it's a pickup.
It's a pickup, is it?
Pick it up.
Well, how are we going to give it away, though? Maybe you just text in the word gay to 5395. First person to text in the word gay with a Simplicity B card can, you can pick up the voucher from here today,
yes,
or just whenever.
Yep, today.
Or whenever, the next day.
Whenever you like.
Mezze Bar open all the time. You can just eat there and drink there all the time.
My first gay date was there, actually.
Was it?
Oh, that's
all going full circle.
Thank you very much, Sam.
Thanks,
good day.
Guys. Bye.